is one of the most vibrant cities in Iran. For centuries, Qazvin, also known in history as Caspian, has been a melting pot of people and cultures, and also one of the important hubs for trade and commerce in the region due to its special situation on a part of the Silk Road, where merchants brought in commodities from the four corners of the world. And there was a special place for that purpose, a building which is still alive until today.
The Sadr Sultan Caravanserai was one of the greatest icons of Qazvin city before it was partly abandoned near the end of the Qajar dynasty. But today the caravanserai is back on its feet once again, thanks to restoration efforts by the municipality. Covering an area of around 35,000 square meters in the heart of the city, Sadr Sultan is visited by thousands of people, including tourists, every day. In the early afternoon, just prior to rush hour, a gentle breeze accompanying the tranquil atmosphere becomes the main theme in long passages inside the caravanserai. The combination of bricks, tiles, and wood by dexterous Iranian architects have created breathtaking perspectives and perfect symmetries all across the building. Just close your eyes and imagine the camel bells ringing as they bring in goods from China, India, and Europe to Iran.
Here, the biggest roofed caravanserai in the entire Middle East continues to win the admiration of its visitors. Looking at the arcs and the domes covering each corridor, you could feel yourself standing inside a genuine Iranian bazaar.
Sadr Sultan Caravanserai is a hangout for art lovers more than anything else. A Persian calligraphy class teaches the artistic way of writing to kids. In another corner, courses in wood carving are offered to enthusiasts by the famous master Said Farhadian, who turns wood into magic. In one of the shops, handmade leather products and equestrian gear are offered to clients. Qazvin's antique mats and felt products are also available. If you're after handicrafts, medicinal herbs, and sweet souvenirs, this is the right place to be. Here you can also experience a perfect traditional restaurant and a peaceful Iranian tea house as well. Most of these shops are open since the renovation of the caravanserai a few years ago. However, there are also old-timers who've spent a lifetime here.
More than a century ago, architects used all in their power to build this caravanserai as attractive as possible for merchants who arrived here to rest, to trade, and also to transit their goods. Today, the same amount of accuracy is being put into restoring the building so that Sadr Sultan could continue to attract people.
Harmony is everywhere, from the floor to the ceiling. New brass wall sconces add additional warmth and depth to the caravanserai's interior. A visit to this historical place can keep you entertained for a whole day and create unforgettable moments for everyone.
The Sadr Sultan Caravanserai is another page in the colorful book of Iran, with memories that could remain in your mind forever. Life is short. Don't forget to visit this beautiful place.
Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Persian handicraft is steeped in history and a big part of Persian tradition and culture that has always remained alongside its people even till this day. Persian handicraft has offered countless forms of eye-catching crafts that have left any visitor to this ancient land baffled and bedazzled.
Now, when you come to Tehran's handicraft hub, you're met with amazing artwork and also handicraft work, and you have so much to choose. The interesting thing is that everything here is made out of wood, and I would really love to see how this was made.
marquetry, which is a form of wood inlay. It is the art and craft of bringing pieces of veneer together to a structure or surface to form decorative patterns, designs, or even portraits, an art many Iranian craftsmen have learned to master.
They're all made out of wood, and they're from different colors of wood, and trust me, it has taken hours, even months, for an artist to sit down and bring all these little pieces together and make it what it is right now, a wonderful piece of art, and it's this art that we call marquetry.
In order to bring together an array of colorful veneer into detailed and delicate shapes and sizes, and produce an astonishing and intricate masterpiece requires determination, hard work, an artistic vision, and lots of skill. Years of practice is a must to master marquetry.
I know that this is quite impressive and very amazing in every way, but it's not just wood inlay that's amazing as well. There's other kinds of inlay artwork. There's also stone inlay and also metal inlay.
However, the craftsmen have not restricted themselves to just using wood or just the technique of marquetry itself. After all, it is a competitive market with customers always wanting high standards and unique works of art.
Now, the art of inlay isn't just about working with wood. You can also use different kinds of materials, and it really depends on the artist or the craftsman and what materials they want to use. They could use, well, different kinds of metals or even different kinds of stone, like turquoise or maybe mosaic. It really depends on the artist and what kind of result they want to produce with it.
Nowadays, craftsmen include other materials, such as turquoise, and different techniques of inlay, such as intarsia, into their works. And sometimes, it is this combination and mixture of different elements that give it a one-of-a-kind finish. So you've seen what masters of marquetry are capable of, and it doesn't stop there. Talented artists of this caliber are seen in all areas of Persian handicraft. And if you don't believe me, then come and see for yourself.
Nowadays, craftsmen and artists, they use different kinds of techniques and different kinds of inlay to produce wonderful works of art. I hope you enjoyed it, because I did. I'll see you next time. Reza Golzadeh for Iran.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. I am Asuma, and it is a pleasure to be with you this Saturday. We've got more enriching content lined up for the rest of the hour. So let's take a look at what's coming your way. Next, we'll bring you Iran Today, your gateway to in-depth coverage of key developments within the Islamic Republic of Iran, from advancement in science, technology, to updates on the economy and business sectors. This program offers exclusive insights and interviews you won't want to miss. After that, enjoy another round of radio productions. Stay tuned.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
For nearly two decades, Iran's peaceful nuclear program has been met with relentless opposition from the West. Pressure came in many forms. Endless negotiations that went nowhere, punishing sanctions, and even military action. When Israel and the United States struck Iranian nuclear sites with uncertain results, the European trio, France, Germany, and Britain, stepped in with their own strategy, activating the so-called snapback mechanism. On August 29th, they triggered the countdown for the automatic return of UN sanctions on Iran. The move was immediately welcomed in Washington and Tel Aviv. But what exactly is snapback? Why does Iran reject it? And what does this showdown reveal about Europe's role in the nuclear dispute? France, Britain, and Germany, the three signatories of the JCPOA, have now activated the snapback mechanism. This mechanism has always hung over Iran like the sword of Damocles, suspended and ready to drop. And despite the fact that these very countries have repeatedly violated the deal themselves, it was entirely predictable that they would not abandon such a pressure tool against Iran. Just a short while ago, when U.S. President Donald Trump, the man who tore up the JCPOA back in 2018, demanded new talks with Iran, these three European states stood on the sidelines. They remained silent, despite being part of the very agreement Trump shredded. Only after Washington and Tel Aviv launched illegal attacks on Iranian facilities did the European Troika resurface. And their first priority was not reviving the nuclear accord, but weaponizing it, invoking snapback to pile on sanctions. To critics, it looked less like diplomacy and more like appeasement, a way to curry favor with Washington rather than to uphold an agreement they themselves had failed to honor. Iranian MP Mr. Ismail Kosari, a member of the National Security Commission in Parliament, Mr. Kosari told us allegiances can speak louder than treaties, sometimes louder than reason itself.
Unfortunately, these three European countries and others both inside and outside the region do not take any action without U.S. approval. In effect, they are simply America's followers. This is not an independent policy. It is exactly what Washington wants. Their hostility intensified after the recent 12-day war when they failed to achieve their objectives against us. They sought to weaken and even divide Iran, but by God's grace, they did not succeed. Having failed, they are now resorting to these political maneuvers.
The term snapback refers to the automatic reinstatement of sanctions against Iran. It is in fact a legal and diplomatic process under UN Security Council Resolution 2231. That resolution endorsed the 2015 nuclear agreement between Iran and six world powers. That is five permanent Security Council members plus Germany. With its adoption, six earlier resolutions that had imposed sweeping sanctions on Iran were lifted. Now, with the activation of the snapback mechanism, those same six resolutions are set to be reimposed. The snapback doesn't just mean sanctions. It means the automatic return of six hard-hitting UN Security Council resolutions. Resolution 1696 in 2006, demanding Iran suspend uranium enrichment. Resolution 1737 in 2006, banning sensitive nuclear activities and restricting technology transfers. Resolution 1747 in 2007, escalating financial and arms restrictions. Resolution 1803 in 2008, targeting banks, cargo inspections, and imposing more travel bans. Resolution 1835 in 2008, reaffirming earlier demands. Resolution 1929 in 2010, the toughest of them all, comprehensive arms embargo, major banking and shipping restrictions. Together, they represent the harshest era of sanctions Iran has ever faced, an era the JCPOA was supposed to end, not revive. Mr. Kosari said when the accuser forgets their own record, the debate becomes theater.
They're exaggerating this issue far beyond what it merits. Legally, the real question is why they themselves failed to honor their commitments. Instead of being held accountable, they now act as if they're above the very agreements they drafted and approved. As far as I can tell, the matter is not as significant as they claim. Yes, they have imposed sanctions on us, and now they speak of reactivating UN sanctions and similar measures. But in substance, it's not a major development. The real impact is psychological, not practical. Economically, they think these pressures will cripple us, but that is not the case. We know how to continue our work and how to adapt, so the damage will be limited.
Europe says Iran failed to uphold its commitments. Tehran replies, not true. Every step it has taken, it insists, was allowed under the deal itself. Article 36 of the JCPOA is clear. If one party leaves or others fail to deliver, Iran has the right to scale back its commitments. The United States walked out in 2018. Europe promised to fill the gap and failed. So when Iran reduced compliance, it says it was acting within the agreement, not outside it. International law supports that position. The Vienna Convention states, a party that breaks its own obligations cannot hold others accountable. By that standard, it is Europe, not Iran, that stands in violation. We also talked to Dr. Mohsen Abdullahi, Associate Professor of International Law at Sheikh Beheshti University. We asked him to put the European Troika's move into legal perspective.
According to Articles 36 and 37 of the JCPOA, a state wishing to refer a compliance dispute to the UN Security Council must first exhaust several layers of dispute settlement. The issue must begin in the Joint Commission. If unresolved, it proceeds to the level of foreign ministers and may also be reviewed by a three-member advisory panel. Only after these steps can a participant state decide either to limit its own commitments or to bring the matter before the Security Council. The European Troika has not observed these procedures. In their 8th of August 2025 letter, they asserted that they had already triggered this process in 2020. However, as both Russia and China emphasized in their formal correspondence, the matter remained unfinished and the prescribed sequence was not completed.
And there's another twist. After Israeli and American airstrikes left Iranian nuclear facilities badly damaged, Europe is now citing violations of a program that in many respects no longer exists in its original form. Tehran calls that claim absurd. How can you enforce obligations on centrifuges that were bombed into rubble? Then there's procedure. With the United States gone, the JCPOA's Joint Commission is incomplete. Filing a snapback complaint without it, Iran argues, is legally hollow. Russia and China agree, telling the UN Security Council that Europe's action is unlawful and contrary to both the JCPOA and the international treaties it rests upon. And Europe's record doesn't help its case. Remember Instex? The mechanism unveiled with fanfare in 2019 to keep trade flowing? Iran considers the activation of the snapback mechanism as unlawful. What legal evidence does Iran have to support this claim?
Following the U.S. withdrawal in May 2018, the European parties failed to honor their own obligations. They neither lifted economic sanctions nor facilitated normal trade, banking transactions, or access to SWIFT. The proposed mechanism, INSTEX, collapsed without delivering results. Moreover, in 2023, the eighth year of the agreement, they were required to undertake specific legislative measures at the EU level, but did not. Thus, the European states are in breach both procedurally and substantively. From a legal perspective, they lack the standing to invoke the snapback mechanism. Iranian officials have also argued that by consistently disregarding the agreement, these states have forfeited their status as JCPOA participants and therefore cannot claim rights reserved for participants.
According to reports, until January 2020, not a single transaction was carried out through INSTEX. Only in March 2020 did one limited deal take place. The export of medical equipment worth 500,000 pounds from Germany to Iran. That amounted to just 0.003% of the 1.5 billion pounds in trade between the two countries in 2019. In January 2021, Iran's central bank declared that the lack of courage by European states in exercising economic sovereignty and their inability to finance INSTEX was the main reason for the mechanism's failure. Meanwhile, giants like Total, Siemens, and Airbus fled the Iranian market under U.S. pressure. Instead of relief, Iran got new restrictions, so-called human rights and missile sanctions targeting individuals and institutions. All of this, critics say, is in direct contradiction to the spirit and the letter of the nuclear deal. The bottom line, the current crisis is not the result of Iranian defiance. It's the direct result of broken promises by Washington and Europe. The United Nations resolution endorsing the JCPOA demanded full compliance. Instead, America walked away, Europe stood aside, and Iran, under maximum pressure, was left to fend for itself. Mr. Hanif Ghaffari, an international affairs analyst based in Tehran. According to Mr. Ghaffari, in global politics, context often overrules the text. To what extent do you think that this move carried out by the three European countries was an independent move rather than the result of U.S. pressure?
هر پدیده‌ای در نظام بین‌الملل یک بُعد متنی داره و یک بُعد فرامتنی.
In international relations, every phenomenon has both a textual and a contextual dimension. The textual dimension pertains to treaties and formal agreements such as the 2015 nuclear deal, JCPOA. The contextual dimension reflects the political realities that dominate these texts, effectively making the textual provisions a dependent variable shaped by broader political considerations. This principle has always applied to Iran's nuclear file. The JCPOA has always had a stronger political than legal dimension. The behavior of the Obama administration prior to the U.S. withdrawal and the subsequent actions of the Trump administration clearly demonstrate that political considerations have consistently outweighed legal ones. European states operate within this same context. Germany, France, and the UK, along with other EU members, position themselves as politically aligned with Washington due to security ties within NATO and economic and infrastructural linkages. Thus, we cannot treat Europe as independent of the U.S., and the activation of a snapback mechanism should be seen as a political, not purely legal action.
The principle of good faith enshrined in the UN Charter and the Vienna Convention is supposed to govern all treaties. But when Europe itself has acted in bad faith, can it really invoke the snapback clause with credibility? Even European diplomats admit this is their last card. Play it and there's nothing left. Instead of making Europe stronger, it risks making them irrelevant. Iran once saw the Troika as mediators. Now it sees them as messengers. And the cost of pressure, Tehran warns, will be steep. We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news highlights. Mehr News. Iran to make proportionate decisions if snapback invoked. VP. Iran's first Vice President Mohammad Reza Arif says that if snapback mechanism is activated by the three European powers to return the sanctions on the country, Tehran will make proportionate decisions. Speaking in a cabinet session on Sunday, Arif emphasized that Iran has always managed to move within the framework and specified strategies of the governance in the face of sanctions imposed against the country. He said that the European countries, the United Kingdom, France, and Germany lack the authority to invoke the snapback mechanism. Once the snapback mechanism is triggered, Iran will make the proportionate and necessary decisions, he underlined. Iran entitled to respond to E3's unreasonable snapback move, ex-Pakistani envoy. Iran has every right to respond to the recent move by the European Troika to trigger the snapback of sanctions, says a former Pakistani ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency, describing the step as unreasonable and aligned with Washington's unlawful conduct. Ali Sarwar Naqvi, executive director of the Center for International Strategic Studies, said in an exclusive interview with IRNA that the attempt by France, Germany, and Britain to restore UN sanctions reflects the same bias and unfair attitude of the Western bloc against Iran. He added that the European parties to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal are following in the footsteps of U.S. President Donald Trump, who unilaterally withdrew from the agreement in 2018 during his first term. Their behavior is completely prejudiced and duplicitous, Naqvi noted. The former ambassador argued that the European approach undermines prospects for the peaceful resolution of Iran's nuclear issue, saying they are attempting to impose their will on Tehran with negative intentions. Naqvi emphasized that Iran's positions against such reckless measures is legitimate, stressing that Tehran is entitled to any reciprocal response to protect its national interests. He concluded that while Iran upheld its commitments, the U.S. and Europe repeatedly failed to honor theirs, instead choosing a negative and unreasonable path. Reuters. Iran ready to resume fair nuclear talks if West shows goodwill, foreign minister says. Iran is ready to resume fair negotiations over its disputed nuclear program if the West shows goodwill, Iran's foreign minister Abbas Araghchi said on Thursday, hours after three European powers triggered the process to reimpose UN sanctions on Tehran. Araghchi reaffirmed Iran's readiness to resume fair and balanced diplomatic negotiations on the condition that the other parties show seriousness and goodwill and avoid actions that harm the chances of success, he said in a letter sent to European Union Foreign Policy Chief Haya Kallas. Tehran Times. NPT and diplomacy will be dismantled after snapback activation, sources tell Tehran Times. A high-level informed Iranian source has told the Tehran Times that activating the disputed snapback mechanism to reimpose UN sanctions on Tehran would force a very strong reaction from Iran, deal a serious blow to global non-proliferation efforts, and permanently destroy the path of diplomacy. The source, speaking on condition of anonymity, said Western states have miscalculated Iran's resolve and operate under the perception that Tehran would not respond forcefully to such a move. We consider leaving the snapback unwavered as a path towards greater tensions, the source said. While Iran previously said it would leave the NPT Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, if the snapback were triggered, it now appears to believe such a move would mean it should no longer negotiate its nuclear program with the West. With the activation of the snapback mechanism, neither Iran's economy nor the internal unity will be destroyed, but the negotiations will certainly be destroyed, the source said. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative. Iran's policy toward Europe's attempt to trigger the snapback mechanism is clear. Based on the JCPOA itself and international law governing treaties and agreements, Iran considers this action to be illegitimate and unlawful. Russia and China agree. Both have formally declared Europe's action unlawful, stressing that only a fully functioning JCPOA joint commission could consider such a complaint, and that commission has been dysfunctional since Washington's exit. Mr. Ghaffari said history is rarely static, and perceptions evolve faster than treaties. To him, Iran is now in a more favorable position than 10 years ago, no matter how much the West has tried to undermine its status in the world. What do you think would be the repercussions of this action carried out by the three European countries? Do you think that it would result in a general consensus against Iran, or is the situation different this time?
معتقد هستیم که شرایط سال 2025 میلادی با شرایط
The international environment in 2025 differs significantly from the pre-JCPOA period. Previously, many states and publics viewed Iran as a maximalist actor on nuclear issues. Today, observations of Iran's conduct through the Obama, Biden, and now Trump administrations demonstrate its flexibility, good faith, and responsible behavior. This evolving perception is reinforced by the abstentions of China and Russia in Security Council votes on multilateral sanctions, indicating broader international acknowledgement of Iran's position.
The legal case against snapback is substantial, but is law really what's driving Europe's decision? Talking from experience, the answer is no. Yet, Dr. Abdullahi believes that Tehran can still beat the odds and succeed in its showdown with the West.
The Security Council lacks an independent enforcement arm and relies on member states to implement its resolutions. This reality underscores the importance of Iran's diplomatic engagement with the broader international community. If Iran can effectively demonstrate the illegality and illegitimacy of reimposed sanctions, many states may be reluctant to implement them, limiting enforcement largely to Washington's closest allies. In addition, Iran could pursue a request for an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice. Such an opinion would provide authoritative legal arguments to undermine the enforcement of any reinstated resolutions and could exert both legal and political pressure on the Council.
Iran had already warned the three European countries that such a biased and unlawful move would carry consequences. Iranian officials had stated that cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency would be impacted and could even come to a halt. Soon after the European Troika's action, Iran's parliament announced that it would immediately motion a table calling for withdrawal from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and its additional protocol. For Iran, the message is clear. Activate snapback and you risk dismantling what little cooperation remains. Critics in Tehran see Europe's move not as strength, but as desperation. After decades of sanctions, Iran has learned to adapt. Even Western analysts concede that most of the economic damage has already been done. The ceiling of sanctions is already reached, said former U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. If the economic impact is minimal, then snapback becomes a psychological weapon, propaganda meant to exert extra pressure, even as Europe's influence wanes. Do you think that the activation of the snapback mechanism indicates the end of the JCPOA?
The JCPOA included sunset clauses that gradually removed restrictions. For example, lifting the arms embargo in year 5 and ending missile-related provisions in year 8. By year 10, the 6 prior UN sanctions were intended to expire permanently. Yet the JCPOA contains no explicit termination clause. It does not address what happens if neither side fully implements the agreement. This legal gap creates risks. Should the sanctions return after the 30-day process, expected in October 2025, Iran might simultaneously face old UN obligations while still being treated as bound by the JCPOA. To avoid this outcome, a clear legal strategy is necessary. Iran should issue a formal declaration of termination or withdrawal, affirming that the agreement no longer has legal effect.
Iran will not accept being treated as an exception to international law. If the West insists on zero enrichment, there will be strong resistance. If, however, their concern is simply to ensure that Iran never builds a nuclear weapon, there is room for dialogue. Tehran has made it clear any return to negotiations would be negotiations under arms. In other words, Iran will keep its finger on the trigger because trust in the other side simply doesn't exist. There are plenty of reasons for Iran's deep suspicion of their intentions. The three European countries have given Iran 1 month to comply with three conditions. Restore full IAEA access, reduce enriched uranium stockpiles, and most controversially, enter direct talks with the United States. That last demand exposes the hollowness of Europe's position. By conditioning sanctions relief on bilateral U.S.-Iran talks, Europe effectively sidelines itself. Once seen as mediators, the Troika now look more like messengers for Washington. Iran, along with Russia and China, has pushed back. In a joint letter to the UN Secretary General, the three foreign ministers Abbas Araghchi, Sergei Lavrov, and Wang Yi denounce Europe's move as both legally baseless and politically destructive. The implications are profound. By weaponizing snapback, Europe risks burning its final card in the Iran file. Any hope of acting as a credible intermediary has all but vanished. And in the bigger picture, Europe may have dealt a blow not only to Iran, but to its own security interests in West Asia. For years, European capitals have insisted they were guardians of diplomacy, defending the nuclear agreement against American sabotage. But by activating snapback, they've revealed a different reality, one of weakness, inconsistency, and subordination. Iran sees it as proof that the West does not seek resolution, only leverage.
Iran's legal stance draws on precedent, such as the 1970 UN resolution regarding Namibia and rests on customary international law and judicial practice. The principle is that a party that fails to meet its commitments cannot invoke other provisions to assert claims. Applied to the JCPOA, European states that fail to lift sanctions, impose arbitrary limitations, or support U.S. military interventions cannot legitimately activate Articles 36 and 7. Additionally, the Brussels Agreement, issued after the U.S. withdrawal, contained 11 commitments from the EU to facilitate Iran's trade, energy, and shipping needs while keeping Iran in the JCPOA. These commitments largely failed in practice, culminating in the non-functional and largely symbolic INSTEX mechanism. This demonstrates that Europe has not fulfilled either its Brussels commitments or its obligations under JCPOA precedents, strengthening Iran's legal and political position.
And Europe, in its bid to matter again, may have made itself irrelevant. Because in the end, the snapback mechanism, or in a better word, snapback machination, may not snap Iran's resolve, but it may snap Europe's credibility instead. Mr. Kosari made it clear that the West should mind its P's and Q's, as even Iran's patience has a breaking point. Does the parliament have any plans or strategies in order to counter the reimposition of sanctions against Iran?
The parliament has already taken certain steps, and if Europe continues down this path, we will have no choice but to consider leaving the NPT. We have so far acted with patience and restraint, trying to avoid such a move. But if they insist on using the snapback mechanism to pressure us, we will certainly take that step. This matter is under active discussion, including in the National Security and Foreign Policy Commission, with the foreign minister and other officials. If we reach that conclusion, we will act accordingly.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
against any harm. You and I dream of a day when everybody will live in peace. In this journey, we are companions struggling through what life throws our way. Why should a mother cry? Why should a wife see her husband die? Oh, tell me, why do we have to fight? Why don't we try just you and I? Oh, throughout history, so many senseless wars, yet we never learn. We're building borders around us, but we still have a chance to heal our wounded world. Let's get rid of hatred and see each other as we really are before it's too late.
Çömen. Yani
Bazar.
Plants grow and give fruits and flowers when they are in the most ideal circumstances. Proper amount of sun, water, soil conditions, and the right temperature are all the ingredients for a happy plant to grow and do what it does best. These days, being a successful farmer is a much more complicated and demanding profession than in the past. Farmers today not only need to have great agricultural skills, but they also must have exceptional technological and marketing expertise. And the most recent trend in farming are greenhouses.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In this program, we will explore new developments in Iran's vast agriculture industry while shining the spotlight on greenhouses. We wanted to see what all the fanfare is about with this type of farming. Plus, we will also check out how it's making profits in the agriculture sector. So plant yourself in a comfortable seat and let's start the show.
Our journey began at Farakish the Parsian, This company has been around for decades and has a rich history of activity in livestock rearing and farming. Some years ago, it launched a new business specializing in high-tech hydroponic greenhouses. It's an indoor farm with greenhouses built on many hectares of land. Mainly, it grows three types of produce and a variety of tomatoes, peppers, and lettuce. Each year, it may focus on growing a single type of crop, such as peppers. They have perfected Mother Nature indoors through a combination of science and technology married with farming. The goal is to provide sustainable indoor farming solutions that optimize the use of natural resources. Hydroponic greenhouses grow crops in nutrient-rich water, so water management is at the heart of this company. The structures are created with state-of-the-art irrigation systems. Also, rainwater is collected and distributed to plants. Drainage from the plants is gathered in pools where it undergoes a purification process to remove contaminants, then recycled back into the system. But that's not all. Special ventilation systems control temperature and air circulation. The greenhouses are equipped with shades to control natural light, plus they are fitted with heating and cooling systems. This type of farming comes at a time when the country is witnessing unprecedented heat and water shortages, partially because of outdated agricultural practices.
This type of farming is growing in popularity. The technical term for hydroponic farming is controlled environmental agriculture, or simply indoor farming. These greenhouses create precise growing conditions using technological advances like digital monitoring that draw out the best flavors and textures in produce, and they can be built almost anywhere.
Aside from being a major producer itself, this company offers its hydroponic technology to farmers and growers. Plus, it helps them plant their own greenhouses. It gets its seedlings from its own massive nursery. The seeds are hybrids that are imported. Using hybrid seeds helps grow crops that match international quality, which is beneficial when exporting their produce. This company collaborates with research and academic institutions for agricultural research of cash crops such as saffron and blueberries. The company stands on the threshold of exporting its produce and welcomes foreign investments to expand its activities. As part of their future vision, they are creating a program for on-site training, which helps users of hydroponic technology in glass greenhouses. Additionally, it is developing lodging and accommodation for national and international agritourists. The most recent addition to their line of work is a packing facility, which packages produce and readies them for market distribution. While the U.S. sanctions do not directly cover the agriculture sector, they have indirectly impacted businesses in this industry. Much of the technology used in this company is imported or has spare parts that need to be imported. The sanctions have hindered international money transfers, making imports and even exports of produce for this company difficult.
As you might know, open land farming is vulnerable to environmental changes. Droughts, cold spells, heat waves, and soil erosion all impact harvests. The agriculture sector not only plays a big role in managing food security, but also is a big contributor to the Iranian economy. In recent years, water shortages have slowed development in this sector, which has gained the attention of government officials.
The Ministry of Agriculture defined several programs to develop greenhouses to tackle drought conditions. Right now, the total greenhouse area in the country stands at around 21,000 hectares. Government officials want to increase this amount to 25,000 by the end of the year. This will help support plans of the Ministry of Agriculture to transfer vegetable farms to greenhouses. The main objective is to save 10 billion cubic meters of water annually. Many of these greenhouses are set up in agriculture parks inside free trade zones. In fact, in the Northwest, Aras Free Trade Zone opened one of the biggest hydroponic greenhouse complexes in West Asia. The goal is to increase productions for exports. For this reason, agri-parks have a major role in developing technology to support efficient indoor farming. The government provided nearly $200 million worth of funds for creating agricultural parks and greenhouses last year. And this supportive measure has paid off, as over 4 million tons of fruits and vegetables were produced this year from greenhouses. Tehran province is one of the country's biggest producers of greenhouse products. Yazd, West Azerbaijan, Bushehr, and Khorasan provinces also have numerous greenhouses, just to name a few.
Iranian agriculture has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. It was one of the only sectors that was barely impacted by the global coronavirus outbreak. Agriculture is not limited to cultivation and farming alone. It also includes dairy, poultry, beekeeping, aquaculture, and so much more. It is considered a strategic sector where goods are enhanced with added value through processing, promotion, and distribution.
Agriculture makes up 8% of Iran's GDP and employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. Iran's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports last year. That's according to the Ministry of Agriculture. Figures from the ministry show Iran has over 18 million hectares of arable land. And last year, nearly 130 million tons of agro products were produced in farmlands. Iran's agro industry is worth billions. Data from Iran's Customs Administration show the value of the country's agricultural exports rose by around 3% this year. Its figures also reveal Iran exported some 5 million tons of agricultural products worth nearly $3 billion this year. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list was pistachio, selling off roughly $540 million worth of nuts. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture products also generated $1 billion in exports.
All right, everyone, it is time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Enjoy.
In a world where our lives are becoming increasingly intertwined with the zeros and ones. We transfer money, we call our friends, and we do our shopping using these two magic numbers that form the foundation of the virtual yet real world that's called IT. Today, I'll walk you around this Iranian company that has a lot to say when it comes to the IT sector. Here, only the impossible is impossible. The motto, which Ida Bonyane Mobtaker Pars has set its targets on, the Iranian brand develops a range of IT and ICT products, from apps and websites to educational content. The idea of launching such a business was developed more than a decade and a half ago in the mind of its CEO, when he was just a high school student. E-commerce is one of the amazing outcomes of the digital space. The emergence of online shopping has provided an instant link between customers and sellers, where customers can easily window shop and get their hands on their desired items in a tap of a finger. Minikala is the name of a newbie online shopping app that's developed by the thriving brand. In less than 2 years, the number of Minikala users is rapidly approaching 500K. Ida Bonyane Mobtaker Pars is an umbrella company that has under its belt a range of startups, producing apps with different purposes, from money management apps to shopping and medical applications. This is what makes this firm stand out from the ever-growing number of rivals in Iran.
Digital marketing is a newbie business in Iran, but still, there are many companies, Iranian companies, who have stepped into the realm of the digital marketing or e-commerce.
Despite its adverse effect on the global economy, when it comes to digital marketing, the coronavirus pandemic was a blessing, making the online space the safest possible channel for people to get their hands on different products. And this company says it fares even better during the pandemic. With a dedicated team bringing together more than 150 highly driven programmers, Mobtaker says it tries to expand the scope of its activity based on the needs of the day. Otherwise, it would stay behind in the fast-paced market.
Many thanks for that awesome report. And that wraps up our show for today. Until next time, take care. We'll see you again on another episode of Bazaar.
bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Iran Radio. Thank you for staying with us throughout the day. As the hours unfold, we're pleased to bring you more thoughtful and engaging programs. Let's begin with news this hour, bringing you the latest headlines and major developments from across the globe. Following the news, we continue with a fresh segment of Radio Productions, a curated selection of enriching audio pieces, thoughtfully prepared to enhance your listening experience. Then it's time for A to Z of Life with Sister Zainab James. This inspiring program explores the Islamic Iranian way of life through various dimensions, drawing from verses of Holy Quran, Hadith.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza continues unabated. The deadly strikes are claiming more lives across the besieged strip by the hour, mostly innocent women and children. The U.N. says Israel's settlement expansions in the West Bank are against international law and systematically erode the viability of a Palestinian state. And an Israeli strike has killed a man in southern Lebanon as the regime presses ahead with its endless violations of the ceasefire.
Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is news.
The U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza continues unabated. The deadly strikes are claiming more lives across the besieged strip by the hour, mostly innocent women and children.
There were six families, around 45 people, trapped under the rubble. Only three people were pulled out alive, and they are now in the ICU. Of the remaining 42, we managed to recover 14 bodies from under the rubble. Most of them are children and women. The rest are still buried because neither we nor the civil defense were able to pull them out after artillery fire directed at us.
In a devastating attack north of Gaza City, 14 members of a single family